and welcome to Studies Through the Bible with Pastor Zach Ebarb. I am Pastor Zach, and today we are continuing our study in the book of Genesis. I know we've been here for quite some time now. We're about at that halfway mark, a little past the halfway mark, actually, at this point, getting into Genesis chapter 29. For, you know, anybody that's new on here, we'll kind of go over a little recap of Genesis 28. For those of you that were here last week, you will remember, of course, that as we were getting into that book, or not that book, excuse me, that chapter, Jacob is leaving home because he has, of course, deceived Isaac and Esau, who are also going against the will of God. We kind of had this big, huge, mangled mess. And Jacob and, of course, his mother, Rebekah, decide they're going to deceive Isaac to make sure that Jacob gets the birthright that God had already said he was going to be given to begin with. And that creates this massive, massive, massive mess for everybody that is involved. And so Jacob, of course, being Esau's brother, Esau being angry and saying, I'm going to kill you as soon as our father has passed on. Everybody decides that it's in the best interest for Jacob to leave until Esau has settled down. And so Jacob left home in Genesis chapter 28, and God came to him at Bethel and gave us some very valuable lessons. Of course, that God is much, much more hands-on than many people had assumed at this point. God does work personally in our lives. That's one of the first lessons that we learned with Jacob. The other one is that despite who Jacob was and what Jacob had done and what Jacob would do, because Jacob's going to be a very hard-headed individual, he's not going to do a lot of what God wants him to do for a very long time. God still was going to maintain the promise that he had said that he would keep. And Jacob, even after having all of this revealed to him, that God says, I'm going to be with you, I'm going to take care of you, I'm going to be your God, though, just like I was for your fathers and your grandfather before you, Jacob gets up from that moment that he still wants to bargain with God, and then he goes on his way. And of course, we've talked about that this is a very long journey that Jacob is making. He's going to Laban, which was his mother's brother. We saw this guy before when the servant of Abraham went to get a wife for Isaac, which of course was Rebekah. And as he's on his way there, it's been a long journey. He's been by himself. It's definitely a treacherous, dangerous thing to be doing, to be traveling on foot for that great of a distance by yourself. And when we get into chapter 29, Jacob has finally arrived at his destination. So here we go. Chapter 29, it says, then Jacob went on his journey and came into the land of the people of the east. And he looked, and behold, a well in the field, and lo, there were three flocks of sheep lying by it. For out of that well they watered the flocks, and a great stone was upon the well's mouth. And thither were all the flocks gathered, and they rolled the stone from the well's mouth, and watered the sheep, and put the stone again upon the well's mouth in his place. And Jacob said unto them, my brethren, whence be ye? And they said, of Haran are we. And he said unto them, know ye Laban, the son of Nahor? And they said, we know him. And he said unto them, is he well? And they said, he is well. And behold, Rachel, his daughter, cometh with the sheep. And he said, lo, it is yet high day, neither is it time that the cattle should be gathered together. Water ye the sheep, and go and feed them. And they said, we cannot until all the flocks be gathered together, until they roll the stone from the well's mouth, then we water the sheep. And while he yet spake with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she kept them. So Jacob is going on his journey. He comes into close proximity of where he is supposed to be. And as he is coming through, he looks down into a field and he sees a well and quite a few flocks already gathered by this well to water their sheep. And so he decides he's going to ask directions, because in this day and time, there weren't exactly roads and street signs and maps and GPSs and all these things. And so he goes down and he asks these shepherd boys that would have been keeping these sheep, you know, where are you from? Where am I at, essentially? And they say, we're from Haran. That's the area you're in. And he asks them, do you know this man? You know, is he alive? Is he well? Again, this day and time, we didn't have cell phones, didn't have text, didn't have any of the things that we have now. So Laban could have been dead, and they probably would not have ever known it. And the young boys go, yep, we know him. In fact, we not only know him, but one of his daughters is coming this way now. And so, in kind of an effort to put on a good front for the daughter of the man he is coming to see, he asks them, you know, well, we know, you know, you guys don't all need to be gathered up here, so, you know, water your sheep and why don't you go on about your way? And they said, nah, we can't do that until everybody has come, because it takes everybody, again, these are young kids out watching this sheep, to move this particular stone so that they can water all of these animals. And so Rachel has now gotten to this well, right? It says, and it came to pass when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, that Jacob went near and rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. And Jacob kissed Rachel and lifted up his voice and wept. And Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's brother, and that he was Rebekah's son. And she ran and told her father. And it came to pass, when Laban heard the tidings of Jacob, his sister's son, that he ran to meet him and embraced him and kissed him and brought him to his house. And he told Laban all these things. So Rachel arrives at the well. Jacob looks at her, and then he, you know, puts on kind of the macho man move and moves the stone for everybody. And then he waters the flock and tells Rachel who he is and, you know, and the journey that he's been on. And she goes and tells Laban, and Laban, of course, comes to see his nephew, basically. And he tells Laban everything that has happened. And now, when we're getting into chapter 29, there's really not a whole lot to glean from these opening details. You know, we could go over and try to, you know, look into, well, you know, at this point, does he love Rachel? Is he kind of, you know, trying to show off, strutting for? We could try and look a little bit more deeply into the conversation that goes on here between him and these kids. But essentially what happens is that this is just giving you, okay, Jacob made it, and this is how he ends up finding out, you know, where Laban and meeting Rachel and kind of getting all of this introductory stuff out of the way to get into the story of what's going to happen in Jacob's life. And so when we're talking about this part, you know, we just want you to glean from the fact that we're here and we've made it. But what's going to happen now is that Laban is a master deceiver, okay? Jacob has not learned his lesson. In chapter 28, God comes to him, tells him, I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to do this. You just need to rely on me. You have to be obedient. You got to trust me. And Jacob has just kind of walked away from that and said, well, I mean, God, I'll tell you what, if you will do X, Y, Z for me, if you'll take care of all of these things, then I'll serve you. If you'll do things the way I want you to, then I'll serve you. And because of Jacob's attitude, God brings Jacob into this situation where he has this warm greeting. Everybody's nice to him. He sees Rachel. Laban comes out and takes him back to the house and embraces him and greets him, because God is about to take Jacob through what my wife and I call the school of hard knocks, okay? I've heard some pastors be a little more eloquent with it. They're called it, the school of hard experiences. And I was like, where I came from, we call it school of hard knocks. Or we said, oh, that poor boy didn't get beat up in high school. That was kind of the mentality of where I came from. And see, this is the sad thing, friends, is that there are so many times in our lives that God does like what he did in chapter 28 for Jacob. He makes it clear. If you'll do X, Y, Z, I'll take care of you. If you'll take care of this, if you'll just be obedient, I'll take care of this situation. If you will continue to trust in me, everything will work out the way it needs to work out. That we, like Jacob, go, God, I'll bargain with you, okay? If you will do this and this and this instead, then I'll let you be my God. That we put ourselves in a position where we have to learn things the hard way. We have to go through pain, a little bit of suffering, a little bit of misery before we learn our lesson. And that is what Jacob has opened himself up for. So let's look at what's going to happen here. It says, "And Laban said to him, surely thou art my bone and my flesh. And he abode with him the space of a month." So Laban pulls him in, says, you're my flesh, you're my family. Come, you'll stay with us. And so he's there for a month. So for 1 month, Jacob is treated as a guest. He's just doted on. Everybody's happy he's there. Laban's happy he's there. Things are going very well. But you and I know who the real Laban is, because we've already seen Laban. And what kind of a man is Laban? Well, Laban is a greedy, evil, manipulative man. Everything that he does to benefit Laban. There's never anything that this man is going to do that is going to be about being kind or doing something kind for somebody else. It's all about Laban. And so we know this, but Jacob has yet to learn that about his uncle. And so he's here for a month, right? And you guys, if you've studied the Bible even remotely, you know that what's about to happen is we're about to have the work 7 years for Rachel, Leah, switcheroo, work another 7 years, get Rachel, okay? You already know what's going to happen in this story. However, I think there's probably some things that have not been drawn out to you about this story that kind of help to add to your understanding of not only what's going on here, but of the fact that Jacob is about to have his sins come home to roost. So look at what happens. It says, "And Laban said unto Jacob, because thou art my brother, shouldest thou therefore serve me for naught? Tell me, what shall thy wages be?" So Jacob's been here for a month. He's been a guest. Everybody's doted on him, taking care of him. At the end of this month, Laban's like, "Okay, dude, you've been here for a month now. If you're going to stay with us, you're going to work. Okay, we're not keeping you anymore. We're not going to feed you and put you up anymore. You're going to have to earn your keep." And he comes off like he's being friendly. What will your wages be? You tell me what I'm going to pay you for your work. But in reality, he's telling Jacob, you're either going to work or you're going to leave. You're not going to stay here anymore and eat my food and stay, at my house and these kinds of things. He's essentially saying, get out or get to work. You're not going to be a freeloader in my house. And Laban had two daughters. The name of the elder was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. Leah was tender-eyed, but Rachel was beautiful and well-favored. There's many, many people that I have heard so many different things about this, is that her eyes were weak. She was almost blind. Leah, you know, she couldn't see very well. I've heard some pastors say that this meant that she had a lazy eye, that she was slack-eyed. But really what the idea of this is that her eyes were not full of life. Have you ever met somebody that when you looked at their eyes, it was like, whoa, wow, you know, there's just this, there's all this energy that you can see there. Whether that's they have this, you know, a fierceness about their personality, or maybe they're just young and still have a lot of energy. Life hasn't gotten a hold of them yet. But whatever the case may be, and how you want to discuss or justify this individual that you can remember from your life, there was something there that was this brightness, this intensity about this individual. Leah didn't have that. Leah was kind of a dull, not necessarily, everybody goes, oh, she wasn't attractive. I don't think that that's necessarily the case. I'm sure that she was probably of an average beauty for this day and time. But she just didn't, there wasn't anything about her that really shined. She was an average woman. Doesn't mean there's anything bad about that. But compared to Rachel, she was very, very overshadowed from a physical perspective. And so here's Laban. What are you going to work for? Here is Jacob, who's been there for a month now. He's been around both of these daughters. He really, really likes Rachel. Okay, now they say that he loves Rachel, and I'm sure that it blossoms into that over time. But at the moment, with what we're talking about, he really likes Rachel in more of a physical sense and fashion. And he's looking at this situation, and he decides that he's going to try to make a good deal. All right? Says, and Jacob loved Rachel and said, I will serve thee 7 years for Rachel, thy younger daughter. Now, this was essentially Jacob saying, I'm going to pay the dowry price and work for your daughter. And he overshot it big time. I've seen some the differing conversations about how many this is. I've seen some people say as little as 2 years. I've heard some say as many as 5 years. But either way, he overshot what he would have had to have worked to pay the dowry price for this daughter, okay? And the reason for that being is that he really, really, really wanted Rachel. And to make sure that Laban didn't say no, he gave him an offer he couldn't refuse. And I'm sure that Jacob also at the same time was thinking, all right, this is a price he can't refuse, so I'm definitely going to get her. I'm going to get what I want. And that's always been Jacob's mindset when trying to achieve things. And Laban said, it is better that I give her to thee than that I should give her to another man. Abide with me. And Laban says, oh, that's perfectly fine. We can definitely do that, Jacob. I mean, it would be better for me to give her to you. And he doesn't mean because of who Jacob is, but because he knows Jacob's gonna be a very rich man when his father dies. He says, so it's better that I give her to you. You stay, you'll work for me. And Jacob served 7 years for Rachel. And they seemed unto him but a few days for the love he had to her. So for 7 years, Jacob does work that Jacob has never had to do. Jacob came from a wealthy home that had servants. He didn't have to do any of this hard manual labor. He didn't have to take care of sheep. He didn't have to take care of, you know, crops and chores and things of this nature. And for 7 years, Jacob becomes a servant. And I do not doubt at all that that was not part of God's plan. Because remember, God is going to be taking Jacob through the school of hard knocks. Jacob doesn't have any dependence on God, didn't think he needed God, thinks he can bargain with God. And so God is going to show him, not only do you need me, not only can you not bargain with me, but not also, you cannot rely on yourself in this life. Jacob up to this point has been all about Jacob's abilities and what Jacob can make come to happen, you know, to fruition. I am sure that he walked away and went, yep, I pulled that off with Dad. Yep, I pulled that off here. Now with Laban, I'm going to pull this off too. But God has brought Jacob to a man that's a whole lot smarter than Jacob and a whole lot more manipulative than Jacob. And so for 7 years, Jacob works for this man. And it says it was just like a few days for him because of how much that he loved Rachel. And the idea of love there is that of a genuine love. He was ready and willing to work. He was ready and willing to wait to take her as his wife. And it says, and Jacob said unto Laban, give me my wife, for my days are fulfilled, that I may go in unto her. As soon as that 7 years is up, on the day of, he goes to Laban and says, pay up, you owe me my wife. And Laban gathered together all the men of the place and made a feast. Laban doesn't just give him his wife. Laban goes, oh, there's going to be a wedding. He gets everything all set up. He calls in the whole party. He's going to do all this stuff. And it came to pass in the evening that he took Leah, his daughter, and brought her to him. And he went in unto her. And Laban gave unto his daughter Leah Zilpah, his maid, for an handmaid. And it came to pass that in the morning, behold, it was Leah. And he said to Laban, what is this thou hast done unto me? Did not I serve with thee for Rachel? Wherefore then hast thou beguiled me? So what happens? Laban puts together this big wedding, right? Calls everybody in. He does the typical Laban thing. All show, all pomp. Plans out the week-long festivities for a wedding. On the wedding night, when the marriage would be consummated, of course, you know, everybody knows what that means. He, instead of giving Jacob Rachel, he switches her out for Leah. And Leah goes in and consummates the marriage bed with Jacob. Now, when we get to this story, everybody, whether it's an old woman, young woman, old man, young man, everybody goes to town on Leah in this story for what happens. And a lot of that has to do with culture, okay? Everybody argues about how this happened, why would they do that? Friends, in this culture, fathers were the absolute authority. You didn't say no. Today, a teenager says no to their father, and he threatens to spank their bottom. And everybody and their dog comes unglued. You got people trying to call DHS on you because you disciplined your kid. You try to take their phone or ground them. Everybody comes unglued. How could you do that? That was not the case in this day and time. And quite frankly, I'll be just blunt to the point with you on here. That's why kids today are so out of control. Fathers were the absolute authority. You didn't tell your father no. You didn't disagree. You did what you were told to do no matter what, especially when you were under his roof. many people may look at this and go, well, see, that's the reason that it shouldn't be that way anymore. No, this is what happens when there is a wicked man who is in that position of authority. This is not the rule. This is the exception. Laban tells Leah what to do, and Leah would not have had any other choice. It's either do what your father has said or risk much worse. And so when Leah is forced into this position, I am sure that she probably was of agreement of it because she knew, like everybody else in that household knew, that Jacob was going to be a rich man. And that was the job of a daughter, was to marry a rich and wealthier man. That was the job. You get a man who is going to financially be able to take care of your entire family. That was the goal with daughters in this day and time. And so it was her father said, you're going to do it. She was the eldest daughter, which means in that day and time, she would have been married first. And her father is commanding her. And between all of those factors, yeah, Leah goes in and obeys. But Leah, as you're going to see towards the end of this chapter, is one of the truly innocent victims in this story. She goes in, and of course, then the next part that comes into this is, how did Jacob not know who it was? By the time the festivities were over, it was dark, and no, friends, they didn't have light bulbs back in that day. It would have been dark enough that he would not have been able to distinguish who this was. They were veiled until the very, very end of the wedding after they had gone into the tent to consummate the marriage with their husband. Been very easy to fool Jacob. She goes in, they consummate, of course, next morning. He rolls over to say, good morning, honey. And it is Leah. It's not Rachel. And Jacob is extraordinarily wroth, and he goes out and he gets in Laban's face and he says, how could you do this to me? Which were basically the same words of whom? His father Isaac. Friends, Jacob in this story is a classic example of be sure your sins will find you out. Jacob wanted to rely on his ability to deceive people. Therefore, God allowed a man who was a better deceiver to pay back Jacob what he had given all of his life to other people. Friends, when you and I try to live by our own abilities, or we try to live off of our own sinful desires, we use our own sinful pursuits as a way to take care of and provide for ourselves, God is going to let that come home to roost. The worst kind of punishment for sin is that for the sin that you have committed to be committed against you. Jacob here had used deception, and now Jacob has been deceived in a much grander way than he did his father. And Laban, of course, always the man with an excuse, is that Laban said, it must not be so done in our country to give the younger before the firstborn. Fulfill her a week, and we will give thee this also for the service which thou shalt serve with me yet 7 other years. Laban says, what? You didn't realize that's who it was going to be? I mean, man, you've been working for 7 years. We couldn't get rid of Leah to save our life. And we never give the younger daughter before the older. So, you know, I mean, it is what it is. I figured you knew that. You've been here for 7 years. You should have been looking for a boyfriend for her, okay? But I tell you what, big guy. You serve me another 7 years, I give you the other one. Laban he's not even shocked. He looks at Jacob, and he doesn't have any guilt, no remorse, no anything. He goes, well, big guy, you've got her now. If you want the one you actually wanted, well, you work another 7 years, and I'll give her to you. Rachel and Leah are completely innocent victims in this situation. Jacob's sins have placed him in this position. And Laban's desires for wealth have just tangled and tied it all up into a neat little bow. And of course, what do you think Jacob does? He agrees to work, doesn't he? It says, and Jacob did so and fulfilled her week. And he gave him Rachel, his daughter, to wife also. He finishes the wedding week. He gave the wife that he did not want. And he begins his 7-year span of work for the wife that he does want. It says, and Laban gave to Rachel, his daughter, Bilhah, his handmaid, to be her maid. And he went in also unto Rachel, and he loved also Rachel more than Leah, and served with him yet 7 other years. Jacob's sins come home to roost. He's married to Leah. Hates Leah for all intents and purposes. Didn't want Leah. Never did want Leah. Works another 7 years, gets Rachel, and then it's blatantly obvious to everyone the wife that he prefers. Friends, let me tell you something. First and foremost, when you walk into a situation and you try to assess it by your own abilities, you're going to do like Jacob every time. You're going to be deceived. You shouldn't, if you ever are looking through the world based on your own ability to read and understand what is occurring, instead of relying on God the way Jacob should have been when he got to the well at the very beginning of this story, you're always going to be deceived. But secondly, when you're living by your abilities, God's going to allow your sins to come home to roost. God's going to take you to what we call the school of hard knocks, where he is going to use everything that you have done to teach you to never do it again. And the logical answer to this is when you have been taught a lesson about sin and about trying to rely on yourself and your own abilities, the lesson that you should be gleaning here is to then lean on God and to stay away from sin. But instead of that, Jacob uses his anger and his bitterness at the fact that he had been deceived, at the fact that his sins had come home to roost, to commit another sin against his wife, Leah, by willingly hating her before other people. Instead of getting right in his heart and going, yeah, I had that coming, and being the man that he should have been to both of his wives. It says, and when the Lord saw that Leah was hated, he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. Instead of learning from this and being the husband that he needed to be to both of his wives, which no, polygamy is never acceptable in the Bible. I was going to get to that point before we forget about it. Because there's some people look at this and go, well, see, God allowed him to have two wives here. No, what had already been done had already been done. And if we are going to get into the wrong and right of this situation, he is completely in the wrong for having multiple wives. But today, instead of practicing polygamy, we practice serial marriage, which is we have 8 or 9 wives. We just have them one at a time instead of all at one time like this situation. But what's going on here is that the only way to better this situation is for Jacob to have not committed the sin of hating Leah. And God is teaching him that lesson because God sees what's going on in Leah's life and how Leah is not loved as she ought to be loved. And what does God do? He opens her womb. He shuts up Rachel's. Jacob is yet again. Here he is. He's just gotten to eat a little bit of his own cake. And instead of learning his lesson, he's rearing back up and doing something else again. Instead of learning from it and being the husband he should have been, he instead decides to hate the person that was one of the objects of his lesson. And God uses that against him. It says, and Leah conceived and bare a son. And she called his name Reuben. For she said, surely the Lord hath looked upon my affliction. Now, therefore, my husband will love me. She has a husband. She has a child, her first son, and his name's Reuben, which literally means, behold, a son. God opens Leah's womb, and Leah is so desperate for the attention of Jacob, she has a son, and she goes, look, look, you can love me now. I had a son. Doesn't change anything, though. It says, and she conceived again and bare a son and said, because the Lord hath heard that I was hated, he hath therefore given me this son also. And she called his name Simeon, which means heard. Said, surely now, God, look, look around you. God's blessing me. God's heard my affliction. Come on. You know, doesn't this mean you love me? I've had this second son. No. She conceived again and bare a son and said, now this time, will my husband be joined unto me, because I have borne him three sons. Therefore was his name called Levi, which means attachment. Leah says, okay, this is the third son. Surely now Jacob will love me. Friends, Jacob completely hated Leah, but that didn't stop him from being able to carry out his physical desires with her. She has three sons, all in an attempt to finally get him to pay attention to her. God is trying to teach Jacob, Jacob, you bet, suck it up. What you did came home to roost. Now you have to be the man you're supposed to be. Whining and moping isn't going to change anything. Instead, Jacob continues to be a terrible husband to this woman. To the point she's had three sons, and look at what happens. It says, and she conceived again and bare a son. She said, now will I praise the Lord. Therefore she called his name Judah and left bearing. On the fourth son, Leah realized he's never going to change it. Instead of focusing on Jacob and what he was doing, she turns her attention to God. She does what God has been trying to get Jacob to do all along and names her son Praise Judah. And see, friends, God blessed Leah tremendously because Leah did what Jacob would not do. Jacob got taught a lesson that he had coming for a long, long time. His sins were going to come home to roost at some point. Instead of learning from his lesson and being the man he should have been to both of his wives, he loved one more than the other, and he despised Leah because Leah was the reminder of his lesson. Instead of wanting to learn from it and become a better man of God, he continues to fight God, and God continues to throw it right back up in his face that he can't fight him. By closing Rachel's womb and opening the wife that he hates, Leah's. But Leah learned the lesson that Jacob didn't, that she needed to depend on God. And after this fourth son, she quit looking for her husband to be the man he was supposed to be and started praising God for being the great God that he always is. See, friends, this is the thing about it, is that you and I choose how long we go to school. You go, what in the world do you mean by that? Pastor Zach, what does that mean? That means that when you and I get dragged to the school of hard knocks and God teaches us a very, very rough lesson, we have the choice to learn that lesson the first time and not have to go back to school again. But we also have the choice to continue having to be drugged through that school until we learn the lesson. And friends, God's not like the modern day school system where if you get a D, you pass. God expects an A every time. This woman learned what Jacob couldn't figure out even after 14 years of working for Laban. He still hadn't figured out to be obedient and depend on God and to praise God for the great God that he is. So as you're going about your week, okay, I want you to consider this. Because Jacob's going to learn this lesson eventually. He doesn't learn it until a very, 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 very long ways down the road. Okay? He decides to spend somewhere in the ballpark of 20 to 25 years in the School of Hard Knocks before he learns his lesson. But I want you to consider this week. First and foremost, if you're depending on yourself and your own abilities for your life right now, I am going to tell you to heed my words that you better start looking to God to get you through this life. Because the moment that you quit looking at God, there's going to come a time where God is going to demand your attention. And to get that, he's going to place you in the position that he has placed Jacob in, where you're going to learn your lesson one way or another. So first and foremost, if you're depending on yourself this week, now's the time to get back on the horse and let God be the ruler of your life. Secondly, if you're going through the School of Hard Knocks right now, and I can promise you this, friend, we all know when God is the one trying to teach us a lesson, when life gets ugly, we know whether or not it's just life being life, or we are in the middle of a trial and error test run, okay? If you're going through that school right now, friend, you control when you get out of that situation. You can learn your lesson the first time, or God will keep taking you around that mountain until you figure it out. And finally, when you finally learn the lesson that Leah learned so much more quickly than Jacob, make sure to uphold that lesson. Learn from it and grow from it, because see, friends, all too often, when we get dragged through the School of Hard Knocks, we give God yet another reason to take us back to school the way Jacob did. And you're the one who controls how long it takes for you to learn that lesson. Because the moment we're like Leah, where we say, I will praise God, I will put my attention back on God where it's supposed to be, is the moment that God takes us out of that situation and leads us on into what he is striving for our life to look like. Because all too often, there's a lot of side trips that we make in life to the School of Hard Knocks that God had already written the narrative with a much better journey than the one you and I continue to create with our horrible decisions. And so that has been Genesis chapter 29. Jacob is now married to his two wives. He has now run round and round with his father-in-law, Laban. And we're not done with Laban yet. Him and Laban are about to trade some licks again. But I hope that all of you have been enjoying these lessons, that you take it to heart, learn from it this week. As always, I hope that if anybody is new is on here, I cannot see the screen, so I don't know if you are or not. We don't do like the call-ins or any of those things, so I don't see who's logged in or not logged in while we're doing this. But for anybody that's new that's on here, we're glad to have you today. We're always praying for our new people and current people. If you're listening to the recording, hope you guys have a really good week. Learn something from this. As always, though, you guys get out of here and go study.